You're listening to What She Said, a podcast about blogging, creativity and life online, hosted by me, Lucy Lucroft, a freelance journalist and blogger based in Brighton.
Hi Terry, how are you?
Hi, I'm okay, thank you.
Welcome to the podcast.
Hey, thank you for having me on. Nice to chat with you.
Yeah, it's been a while.
Yeah, since you moved to Brighton.
Yeah, I feel, it's sad we can't have our nice walking around Ravenscourt Park.
I know.
Dates, never mind. To be honest, Anais is getting so big and wriggly now that she can't cope with walking anywhere really. She has to get her energy out.
She has to run away.
We are, basically. So, for anybody who doesn't know who you are, would you mind introducing yourself and telling us a little bit about your blogging journey so far?
Hi, I'm Terry and I am... So I'm a mixture of things, just to clarify, because I know lots of people get confused. So I am a blogger, and that's pretty much where everything started out, I would say. But I'm also a designer, and I teach creative workshops, so it's kind of a mix of things. But I started my blog in 2012, I think, so a fair amount of time ago, and... It basically was just because I was so bored in my job, which was technically a creative job, but it was just really lacking creativity. So my husband was on at me for quite a while to start a blog, and I was like, oh no, I don't think I have the time for that. And, you know, I just made loads of excuses, but eventually I was like, okay, no, maybe I will. Because I was always doing little bits and pieces and making things and inspiration boards, and I didn't really have a place to put it, so that's kind of, yeah, that's why it started and when it started as well.
And it's interesting that, so I'll clarify, because probably the reason why your husband was on you to start a blog was he's kind of in the industry, isn't he? Is he a web developer?
So he's a web designer, although he wasn't actually at the time. He's actually become a web designer through my blog and website.
No way.
Yeah,
that's interesting.
Yeah, he he'd done a bit of code stuff at uni, and then he just, I don't really understand how it's possible. I mean, I'm just in awe of web designers in general, but he just sort of taught himself, and then from my website started getting commissions and things, and then has gradually moved into it to do it as like a full-time job. So yeah,
that's crazy. So from your blog,
yeah,
your family's career, like, it's kind of changed everything. Could you talk a little bit about what the moment that the Lovely Draw became more than just a blog and it became a business?
I suppose
it probably wasn't one moment, was it?
No. And to be honest, I was not taking it seriously in the beginning at all. Like, I knew nothing, and... Yeah, I mean, I find it really funny when I think back, because my husband was like, oh, well, you know, you probably need to have like an Instagram account and be on Pinterest and Twitter and, you know, all of these things that bloggers just do. And I was kind of like, really? Why? I don't really know why I need to do that. And so I wasn't really like, I don't know, I wasn't really aware of anything. I was just creating things and putting it on my blog and just really, really enjoying it. And I kind of said to myself that I'd upload twice a week, which I no longer do for other reasons, but for the majority of the time I did do that just because I loved it so much. And then it was kind of it was a mixture of things back then as well, but it was quite design focused. So things for people to make, but also things that were inspiring me. And I included some of my design work that I'd been doing, and I started getting commissions sporadically, usually through people who kind of vaguely knew me, who were reading my blog. And that was great. But it wasn't anything big. And then, gradually it just started to kind of build and build until I was getting like a decent amount of work. And I kind of wasn't really prepared for it because I was still in my full-time job and trying to work every hour of the day because I didn't know how to fit it all in. But I just really, really enjoyed it. And I sort of then asked work if I could go down to 4 days a week, which I thought was going to be a pretty tough sell. I don't know why they agreed to let me go down to 4 days a week, but they did. I think they thought maybe, you know, if I was inspired and creative outside, then I'd be more like that inside of work. But actually, I think it had the opposite effect. I think it just made me realize how much I wanted to be doing that stuff, and kind of getting frustrated that I couldn't do as much of it as I wanted. So I eventually left my job kind of 6 months after doing 4 days a week, and a day for kind of my own freelance stuff. And it was, yeah, it was strange because I've wholeheartedly always said I never wanted to own my own business. I wasn't that kind of person. I was much happier to work for someone else. And yeah, suddenly I was like, actually, no, I think I want to make this work. And there were kind of conflicts of interest then with work. And I was kind of at a point where I just had to make a decision. So much to my friends and family's dismay, I was mental. I was like, yeah, no, I think I just need to leave my job and try and make work, which is so not like me. I'm not a massive risk taker. So yeah, I think people thought I'd lost my head, but my husband was like, do it.
How was the first year, but probably more, how were the first few weeks of being completely self-employed?
I was a total mess. I remember listening to Bombay Bicycle Club on the way home from my last day of work and just kind of like dancing along, swinging my step, like, yeah, I can do this. And then from the next day, I was just like, what have I done? I don't know what I'm doing. And it was sort of like what should have been quite a nice and exciting time, because suddenly I had all this time to put into actually developing and creating things that I've been wanting to create, and I just didn't have the time. And lots of design related things that I wanted to do, and I wanted to be able to sell, which sort of had hopefully long-term benefits in terms of, you know, making money and things. But I don't know, I was really caught up in just, oh no, am I going to make enough money to survive? And, you know, living in London, that's kind of a big worry. Mm. But thankfully at that point, Nick was actually, he was working from home as well, which a lot of people thought might be complete madness and we'd drive each other insane. But it actually just meant that when I was sobbing in a corner, he could try and pull me out of my hole. I think it was a massive emotional roller coaster, and it really, really helped to one, knowing that we had a decent amount of savings so that we could fall back on, because that took the pressure off slightly. But also just getting out and meeting other people who were self-employed and who were creatives, and just hearing the endless amount of people saying you honestly won't regret it, like, it's hard in the beginning, but you will get where you need to be, and you're not gonna look back. And now that's what I say to people.
It is true, isn't it? And I think I don't know if there's a way that you can shortcut that initial
terror.
Yeah, that's what it is, isn't it? It's terror and that emotional roller coaster. And I don't know about you, but I sort of feel like now I feel I still have those moments. I don't know that those moments ever go away, however much money or however consistent your income gets.
Yeah,
things just change. Do you have, so the one of the things that you touched on there was having people that can support you, people that aren't just online, that you can meet up with, is huge when you're self-employed, whatever job that you're doing. Just
definitely.
Was that one of the biggest things that helped you through?
Yeah, I think it really did, because suddenly as well, I'd gone from having colleagues to like no one. It was just me at home and my husband bearing the brunt of my emotions. I think I was quite proactive actually at the beginning, trying to like look up different creative events and just ways that I could go and like in kind of, you know, face to face, speak to people who were doing that kind of thing. And then also so I obviously knew some people on Instagram and stuff, but it was quite helpful to actually, you know, when they were arranging something that was more of an event thing, to kind of make the effort to go along and actually meet them. And I don't know, it just kind of formed a sort of a community that you could kind of like call upon when, you know, you didn't know what you were doing at one stage, or you just needed a bit of help or wise words or whatever, just people that, you know, were already doing it. I think it was really, really helpful. I'd kind of forgotten that actually, that I spent a lot of time going to things just to meet other people that were in a similar situation to me at the beginning.
It's a really simple thing, and for quite a lot of us, we're naturally we're naturally introverted, so it is probably the thing that a lot of us find hardest.
Yeah,
it's uncomfortable, and also most of us would rather do anything than get dressed up and go out and meet people that we don't know. But
yeah,
it is helpful. And one of the things that we were talking about a while ago now was, and I've talked about this with a few people, and I think we all feel the same, is that having a friend in the industry that you feel comfortable to talk about money with or talk about collaborations with is pretty vital if you want to do brand collaborations, particularly because you can get really sold down the river sometimes.
Yeah.
Otherwise.
Yeah, it's so true. And I was probably a bit timid about asking those kind of things in the beginning, but like now I quite often, if I've seen somebody's worked with a brand that I was thinking about working with, and or like even if somebody's approached me, and I don't know, I quite often ask other people what they think I should charge that particular brand if I've seen that they've worked with them before, or I don't know, because otherwise nobody knows anybody's saying.
Yeah, exactly, and that's what brands rely on, right? Because because if we don't talk to each other, then they can just say they don't have budget, or say, oh yeah, I can pay you in exposure and a free product, which for some people might be, actually that might be really valuable and that might be what they want. But for other people, that might be completely pointless. I don't necessarily, that's not valuable to me, exposure. And getting a free product might be of value to me, but it really probably isn't. I just want to be paid. So being able to have those honest conversations with people is pretty vital. I think a lot of us feel uncomfortable and timid about asking.
Yeah, it's silly, isn't it? Because we all have to charge. And I don't know, we probably all think that we're not really worth as much as, well, like sort of our skills aren't worth as much as they actually are. Now I'm quite hard-nosed about that sort of thing, I think, because I've probably spent too long working for not enough, and as you say, like it's there are some brands that you are happy to work with for just, you know, getting some product because you really love what they're doing and you actually really want that thing, like you want to, you kind of probably buy it anyway, if you know what I mean. Then there are other times when it's like a heck of a lot of work that they're asking for, so you kind of need to, you know, match that in how much you're charging. And I remember quite early on, I did used to actually work for, so I was part of a blogging agency for some of the time I've been blogging. I'm not anymore, but I remember when they first said, oh, you know, send over your media kit, which at that stage I was like, cool, media kit. Right, let me just look up what this is. And, okay, I've got to cobble one together. And then like my pricing. And so I just sort of said what I'd roughly been charging. And they were like, wow, you're really undercharging. Which was so helpful to hear, because I was like, oh, wow, okay, interesting. I didn't know that. So yeah, it helps. It's good to ask.
What would your best tips in terms of brand collaborations be for somebody who's just starting out, or for somebody who's been doing it a while, but they feel like something's, they're not, maybe not charging enough, or...
My best advice, what we've been saying, like, speak to other people, kind of find people maybe that are sort of a similar place to you, or maybe like a similar style of blog that might be appealing to similar kinds of brands, and maybe ask them how they're navigating that, and be bold and ask about price. Don't be afraid to ask a brand for just upfront how much their budget is. I think I just feel like in the past I've wasted so much time, you know, the ins and outs of what it could involve, and I don't know, it's just good to know upfront. If you're thinking I kind of need some kind of payment for this, then just ask, what's your budget? Do you have one? And then you can kind of cut it short if there's nothing available straight away, or there's kind of room to negotiate a little bit. I kind of think that brands expect a bit of negotiation here and there.
Definitely. That's actually the first question I ask, and I think it sets a good tone. Yeah. You don't have to be hard-nosed about it. I'll just say, if I want to work with someone, then I'll just say, oh, yeah, that sounds really great. What's your budget? Yeah. And end it at that. Because you're right. Yeah. You can sometimes spend a lot of time crafting a beautiful pitch or coming up with an idea of something exciting you could do together, only for them to say, sorry, we're going to give you vouchers or whatever. Or, yeah.
Yeah, you just need to know upfront, don't you? Yeah. And then you can – and then if it's, I don't know, like in the past, if a brand doesn't have as much to play with as I was at first hoping for, then I can then suggest maybe a way of doing something else that maybe is a little bit less time consuming for me, that would mean that there's still something nice that we could create together, but it isn't maybe as big a thing as they were intending in the beginning.
Yeah, that's a good point, actually.
Because I quite often do that.
And I think that's kind of the reason why I don't believe there should be. I've heard somebody started a whole Twitter thread about how they think they were implying bloggers should charge for this. And sometimes when I hear people say we should just have a standardized, this is what bloggers charge if they've got this following, this is what they should charge for this. And I that's why I disagree with that, because it's all so case by case. And
it definitely is, and it depends kind of what kind of blogger you are and what you're sort of focusing your attention on, because it's going to be different for different bloggers. Yes. I kind of like to work with it case by case thing, and then just see.
So when did the brush lettering workshop start happening?
When did they start happening? Like, maybe 4 years ago. I'm really bad with time. I'm just like, how does time pass so quickly? It basically came from a place of, I've done brush lettering in one form or another for maybe 9 years. And not really thinking anything of it, just like basically messing around with a brush. And I used to do it on enormous sheets of paper and just sort of experiment. And then I started selling the prints online. And I was approached by Lucy from Quill, which is actually now very calligraphy focused. But she basically said, had I ever thought about teaching workshops? And she said, have you ever thought about teaching brush lettering workshops? And I was like, I'm sorry, what? She was like, you know, that the lettering you do. And I was like, oh, right, yeah. I didn't actually know it had a name. trying to play it cool, but it really didn't work. so I was kind of like, oh, I don't know, because I'd always had it in my mind that I didn't want to teach. I just thought that I would be a terrible teacher, and also used to have quite a phobia of speaking in front of large groups of people. So I don't know, I was a bit horrified when she asked, and kind of thought, oh well, you know, maybe I'll just ramble my way through and then hopefully she'll never email me and mention it ever again. which didn't work. I do have things that I'm scared of, but I'm usually someone who just, if it carries on rolling that way, I'll just give it a go. And I know that usually, even though it's horrible, I know that usually if you put yourself in uncomfortable situations and try and stretch yourself, it has good repercussions, and yeah, you're not usually sad that you've done it. So I agreed to do that. So I was teaching for Quill for a while, maybe like a year and a half or so, 2 years, I'm not sure. And then I did actually really enjoy it. And I think once I kind of forgot about myself and was like, no, nobody cares. And when people are listening to you and they've got deadpan expressions, it's just because they're listening. Like, it would be creepy if everyone was smiling at you.
Yeah, that's so true.
I suddenly was like, what do I do when I'm listening to someone? Just sit there with a, you know, expressionless face.
Yeah, so, I never thought about it like that.
Yeah, I mean, it helped a lot because, if someone was just smiling and nodding, you'd probably be like, okay.
It'd be so creepy.
Then I didn't even, like, now I don't even think about it. And I really, really enjoyed seeing people kind of come along and, like, not be able to do it. And then by the end of 2 hours, like, just seeing the progress they could make, and then actually seeing people go away and then emailing me showing me how they'd used brush lettering, I was just like, this is really cool. So then I actually started teaching them for myself, so not for anyone else, just for the Lovely Draw. Maybe like, it'll be 2 years this November. So it's been really, really good. And actually, it's weird because I didn't think that would be such a huge part of the business, and I didn't think that it would be something that I really enjoyed.
That's so funny. And just taking a chance and taking a punt, not even knowing what brush lettering was, saying, yeah, sure, I'll teach that thing that I do.
And I mean, I did have a dilemma at the beginning, because as with most things that you teach yourself, you haven't really picked apart what it is that you're doing. Mm. So I was like, do I just do a demonstration and say that's what you do? And then when I actually started, like, breaking it down, I was like, okay, there are quite a few different things that I'm subconsciously doing, but, you know, I'm not necessarily thinking about. But, that's been really fun. And actually, that's been a nice way, once again, because I work on my own quite a lot, that's been a really nice way of, like, engaging with people on a creative level sort of frequently.
Yeah, that's a really good point, actually. I've been doing a lot more teaching, and I love it. I actually really love it. Yeah, I never thought that I would at all. And it is one of the parts of my business that I'm finding the most rewarding in a very surprising way, so I can totally relate to that.
That's so cool.
Yeah. So because you've got quite a few little strings to your bow, that is a terrible use of English.
Little mini string.
little brush lettered strings to your bow. which part do you like having that? Do you like the fact that you can one day be doing a sponsored post on Instagram and then be writing about motherhood for the joy of it, and then also be teaching people brush lettering, and then be doing a big commission, and then, you know, also all the brand work that you do? Do you enjoy the fact that it's so diverse?
Yeah, I really do. I think I've said this before, but I can kind of appreciate from afar people that kind of make themselves known for one particular thing, and it's very much their brand, and it's very recognizable, and it's like, you know, that thing you go to that person for. I just don't think that I could do that long term, because I just get bored. Like, I love creativity in general, so I think actually what I really struggled with, aside from having some of the creativity squeezed out of it, but with my previous job, was just the monotony of it. Mm. So, you know, you just kind of were doing the same thing pretty much day in, day out, whereas I never really know what's going to land in my inbox, and that's quite nice. And actually, each day there's such a mix of different things going on in terms of what I'm doing. I don't know, I think that keeps me quite excited about what I'm doing. I don't really like doing one thing.
It's funny, I was just reflecting on when you said, so I really relate to when you say there are those people who are just that one thing. I mean, yeah, not one thing, but I know what you mean. Their niche is so tight that you just know they have. And I sometimes think, oh, I wish I was that person, because I feel like my brain would be less muddled. And
I do know what you mean.
But at the same time, I think of you like that. I think, not that you do one thing, but I think of you as a very distinct brand and a very strong voice with a clear aesthetic.
Well, that's good.
So it's funny what other people think about, and I think a lot of people will think that as well.
That's very good. It's something I always worry about, is that am I just confusing people on a day-to-day basis, and find it really interesting asking people what they think I am, because I get, you know, like a range of different answers. But that's good. If there's something tying it all together, at least, that makes me happy.
But I think it's you. I think you're the one that ties it together.
I guess that would make sense.
Because, I mean, it kind of leads me into the fact that you are the lovely draw. The lovely draw isn't separate from you. And I know that your name is Terry. I'm sure that if somebody doesn't follow you intensely, they might not know your name is that, but they know you, they know your face, you're present on stories. They'll know your motherhood journey, perhaps, because you've documented all of that on your Instagram.
Yeah.
Right down to the really personal, when you had a miscarriage.
Yeah.
Was that a conscious decision, or was that just I share everything with my followers, or, you know, Instagram, so I'm going to share this too?
I think I'm quite an honest person in general. Like, that makes me sound really arrogant. I don't mean it like that. I just mean I'm not very good at sort of keeping things to myself. Like, if I'm struggling with something, or if I'm really happy about something, then I will say. Like, I don't feel the need to kind of be overly private. I mean, obviously there are some things that I don't share, but with the having a miscarriage, I think I was just so aware that I share so much on a day-to-day basis of not just, you know, what I'm working on, but like little bits of life and kind of behind the scenes, that it felt really strange to not that I owed people an explanation, but it kind of felt strange to not go into what was going on in my life at that time. So, you know, obviously I suddenly wasn't on Instagram for a bit, and, you know, I wasn't posting on my blog. And then, you know, I had all these posts that I'd got ready to put out, and I don't know, like, it was just like, not that it's bad to post, you know, here's how to make this DIY whatever, or like how to style your bathroom or whatever, because I love that sort of thing, but it just seemed really trivial for me to do that at that time without, I don't know, putting kind of a marker in place to say, actually, this is what's happening, and it's really hard. And I don't know, I think often when I've written more honest stuff on my blog, it's also for me, because I process as I write things.
Yeah.
And I don't have to publish it, but I think, yeah, it really helps me to kind of not process it in a way that, like, oh, I had never thought about those things and it was just sort of like coming out of me. And but I don't know, just sort of like ordering my thoughts, and I don't know, I've never regretted doing that. And with the post that I wrote on our miscarriage, like, I just was so overwhelmed with how many people got in touch with us about, like, their experience and their journey, that, I mean, it was heartbreaking. And actually, like, looking back, I was like, gosh, that really was quite a lot to deal with everybody else's stories while we were still walking through it. But I don't know, I think actually it made me feel not as alone, having that, you know, from an online community, as well as having it in real life with, you know, it wasn't just online that we were very open about it. We were very open about it in real life with everybody we knew, really, but also speaking to people in real life about that sort of thing. I don't know, I always feel like it helps.
Yeah.
And it feels less of a burden if I'm kind of talking about it and sharing it. And I don't know, I felt like it was a real privilege to hear from other women, and other women who said that the post had helped them, and that's kind of exactly how they were feeling. It was really cool.
I think it's, and we talked about this before, the language that's used around miscarriage and the fact that we, when we're pregnant, are encouraged to don't say anything, don't tell anyone until 3 months, actually can be quite a negative. It can be quite a barrier, because if your baby dies, you know, at 2 months, at 9 months, at any age, it's nice to be able to have support and to not feel like you have to keep that secret. So I think 100% it would have helped so many people, you talking about having a miscarriage and talking about Zion openly.
Yeah.
And since, and talking about the anniversaries and...
Yeah, I think it's just like, it's such a big part of our life and what's happened to us that it kind of feels... I don't know, I don't see why people should feel like they can't talk about that kind of thing. Well, like what you were saying about not saying anything about being pregnant in the first 12 weeks. Like, we didn't buy into that, you know, then either. Like, we were very much of the mindset that if the worst did happen, even before it did, we knew that we would, you know, all the people that we would tell that we were pregnant, we would be letting them know what had happened, and we would really want their kind of support and prayers and stuff. So it just, you know, everybody pretty much in our lives knew that we were pregnant anyway. I don't know, I just feel like it's society that tells us that we're not meant to, and we kind of all just buy into it. But I do feel like, yeah, we have to. I mean, sure, if you don't want to, that's fair enough, but yeah, there shouldn't be that pressure. I don't know, I speak to loads of people and they're like, oh yeah, the first trimester was just so painful because it's just so lonely because you're not allowed to tell anyone. And I'm like, but you are allowed to. No one's going to police it.
I remember once, because I was the same as you, I just told people. I occasionally, the people that I didn't tell, I just didn't really feel the need to tell, but I certainly didn't keep it secret. But somebody said to me, oh, you shouldn't say anything and I won't be telling anyone because I'm superstitious. And I was like, I mean, that's not really my problem.
Yeah, if you're superstitious and yeah, I'm not, that doesn't matter.
And it made me realize that the reason that we're told that you shouldn't say anything, of course, it's because miscarriage is a lot more common in the first 12 weeks than it is thereafter. but yeah. it's to protect everybody else from your grief.
Yeah.
I think it's to protect people from the fact that it's maybe uncomfortable for them to hear you talking about the fact that you're bereaved. That's what I think it is.
And it is uncomfortable. Like I from experience pre-miscarriage knew people that lost babies, and it was really hard to know what to say. But I think having been through it, there isn't a right thing to say, and actually people just showing that they care in whatever way that is for them is meaningful. Like it doesn't, yeah, nobody's gonna say the right thing all the time, or you know, what can you say?
Well, that's it, isn't it? It's not about saying the right thing, it's just about saying something.
Yeah.
Or not. You don't necessarily have to, but it's not about it. It's really helpful to know that when someone else is grieving, they kind of aren't thinking about you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Not all about you. It's true. And it was really, I found it liberating as well to be very honest about it with just anyone that I was working with, because obviously I'd been working on a load of projects and then it happened. Mm. And I can't imagine having to try and like cobble through that and try and make excuses for what was going on, but actually just saying what was happening. I mean, obviously people understood. There's like always that fear that they won't. But I don't know, that just took a pressure off that didn't need to be there about kind of worrying about what, you know, clients that you're working with might think about you kind of being a bit slack or those sorts of things, you know?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, I agree with you. I was working in an office. I was staffing a newspaper when I found out I was pregnant, and knowing that if I'd have miscarried, then I think it would have been so hideous to have to come into work.
Oh yeah.
Thinking you're asking me to do this piece of work that is so bloody trivial to me because I've lost a baby, and not to have the support there. But yeah.
Oh yeah, no, I can't imagine that. And I mean, to be honest, it wouldn't have worked. I don't know how women hold themselves together, because I mean, it was pretty clear. I looked a complete wreck and the kids did not start coming, so I don't think I could have fooled anybody, really.
No, not at all. And why should you? Why should you have to fool anybody?
Oh yeah,
isn't it? It's crazy.
Yeah.
That probably leads us nicely into, where can everybody find you online?
Well, so you can find me on, you can have a little read of my blog, which is www.thelovelydraw.com. Currently working on completely overhauling my brand and website as we speak. So hopefully that will be done soon. And I'm also mainly on Instagram, I would say, if you're going to go on any social media platform, and I'm also The Lovely Draw on that as well, so yeah, you'll get to hear all my daily ramblings on stories and whatnot.
I love your stories, they're brilliant.
Oh really?
Thank you so much for coming to What She Said. Been a pleasure.
For having me. It's nice to chat to you.
And you can find me at Lucy Lucraft everywhere. But I mostly hang out on Instagram. You can find old episodes of What She Said over at lucylucraft.com, where you'll also find me chatting about all things blogging, travel, vegan life, and zero waste living too. Lastly, I know everybody asks this and it's a total pain in the ass, but please think about leaving the show a rating and review. It makes a huge difference to getting the show out to new listeners. And for every review you leave, I'll donate £2 to charity. So that's £1 for you and £1 from me. The chosen charity changes each month, so listen out for it in the intro each week. Thanks for listening.